Today is Thursday, April 23rd, and this is the World Socialist Website. U.S. imperialism's war on Iran unleashes global economic and social catastrophe for the working class. By Jordan Shilton. Less than 2 months after fascist U.S. President Donald Trump launched the criminal U.S.-Israeli war against Iran in the dead of night on February 28th, the conflict is having a devastating economic impact on tens of millions of workers around the globe. American imperialism's determination to consolidate its dominance over the Middle East, one of the world's most critical energy-producing regions, has already claimed the lives of thousands of Iranians in 6 weeks of brutal and indiscriminate bombardment. But the economic fallout from the U.S.-instigated war and blockade of the Strait of Hormuz could prove even more deadly. Prior to the war's outbreak, the Strait of Hormuz accounted for some 20% of global oil traffic and a significant portion of natural gas shipments. The consequences produced by the disruption of these energy supplies are already reverberating across the world economy. They include rising fuel costs, higher electricity prices, and escalating transportation expenses for billions of people. The Middle East is also a major producer of fertilizers, so prices have jumped amid the planting season for farmers in the Northern Hemisphere. The result is both increased production costs for crops and reduced harvests, as farmers plant less to cut costs or use less fertilizer, which will fuel a food price spiral over the coming months and into 2027. Shipping disruptions, compounded by heightened insurance premiums and rerouted trade flows, have further increased the price of food imports. The containerized freight index rose 10% within a month of the war's outbreak, underscoring that even traffic not directly impacted by the Strait of Hormuz blockade is affected. On top of the destruction of schools, hospitals, and other civilian infrastructure by U.S. and Israeli missiles, the working class in Iran is bearing the economic brunt of the war. A government spokesman admitted that approximately 2 million workers have lost their jobs as a direct consequence of the conflict. The impact of the war has been particularly acute across the Asia-Pacific region due to its heavy reliance on oil imports from the Middle East. Over 80% of crude and LNG, normally transiting the Strait of Hormuz, is destined for countries in Asia-Pacific, including major industrial economies like China and Japan. Fuel prices have risen sharply in India's major cities, with petrol and diesel costs increasing by roughly 10 to 15% within weeks. In Indonesia, nickel producers have cut output by at least 10% due to shortages of natural gas and sulfur, which are required to produce the high temperatures necessary for extraction and refining of the metal. Severe disruptions to the garment factories of Bangladesh have also been reported due to a lack of polyester and nylon, fossil fuel byproducts used to make clothing. Another critical channel of impact is the disruption of remittances. Millions of workers from South Asia and Africa are employed in the Gulf region, sending vital income back to their impoverished families. The war has disrupted these flows as economic activity slows and employment opportunities shrink. The United Nations Development Program estimated in a recent report that the war on Iran could cost 36 countries in the Asia-Pacific nearly $300 billion and plunge up to 8.8 million people into poverty. 5 million of these live in Iran, where the Human Development Index has already lost 1 to 1.5 years due to the war. The New York Times worried in a lengthy analysis published April 20th that countries throughout the Asia-Pacific may face, quote, shortages that could push several countries into convulsions of unrest, followed by recession, unquote, if the Strait of Hormuz remains blocked for just a few more weeks. Even high-end production, including of semiconductors essential for producing chips built in Taiwan, faces problems. Prior to the war, Qatar produced a third of the world's helium, a critical component of the semiconductor production process. But it stopped production on March 2nd, after an Iranian retaliatory attack hit its gas facilities. As the Times put it, cuts to chip production, quote, would roll through everything from electronics to cars. In Africa, Nigeria has seen fuel prices rise by over 50%, despite the country being a massive oil producer and exporter, since the country of some 240 million people is heavily dependent on imports of refined oil products. Petrol prices have risen significantly, leading to increases in public transport costs and the price of staple foods. In Kenya, the fuel price regulator hiked petrol prices by over 16% and diesel prices by over 24% in mid-April, following a 68% increase in the cost of oil imports. Many African countries depend on imported fertilizers. The surge in natural gas prices has driven up costs for farmers, threatening lower crop yields and outright famine in areas where subsistence farming prevails. At the same time, currency depreciation in several countries is amplifying the impact of global price increases, making imports even more expensive, eroding real wages, and pushing up already crippling debt repayment costs for financially strapped governments. In Europe and North America, fuel prices have also risen sharply, placing yet another burden on working people's budgets amid stagnant economic growth, mass layoffs, and social attacks by the ruling elites in every country to pay for bloated military budgets and the enrichment of the financial oligarchy. In Germany, national airline Lufthansa announced the immediate closure of its CityLine subsidiary amid a strike by thousands of airline workers for job security and pay increases. The continent's governments are investing trillions of euros in their own war machines to prosecute their predatory imperialist interests at the expense of workers' livelihoods and social programs. Across the Atlantic, the Wall Street Journal has announced the era of the mega layoff, with job cuts in finance, technology, entertainment, and manufacturing. By contrast, the war is proving to be a bonanza for the corporations and financial oligarchy. According to one investigation, the world's major oil conglomerates will pull in additional profits of over $230 billion in 2026 alone. The World Socialist website has insisted that U.S. imperialism's war on Iran is one front in the early stages of a Third World War, which includes the U.S.-NATO war on Russia and Ukraine, and preparations for a military conflagration with China. As the imperialist powers in North America and Europe scramble for the upper hand in the redivision of the world, they are totally indifferent to the impact on billions of workers from the global economic and social disaster produced by crisis-ridden capitalism and their crazed policies. But this very disaster creates the material conditions for the development of a working-class movement to end the war and the capitalist profit system, which is its root cause. The parallels to World War I are striking when food riots across Europe during 1916 and 1917 gave an initial expression to growing popular opposition to the imperialist slaughter. The most consequential of these were protests that erupted demanding bread in Petrograd in early 1917, marking the beginning of Russia's February Revolution. 8 months later, the Bolsheviks under Lenin and Trotsky led the working class to power on a socialist program that could bring the world war to an end. Today, the world economy is integrated to such a degree that initial expressions of social unrest provoked by the war have already erupted in its first weeks. Beginning on April 10th, tens of thousands of industrial workers in India's national capital region launched strikes in protest against price hikes triggered by the war. Workers demanded wage increases to cover higher rents, fuel costs, and food prices. Protests have also erupted in countries as diverse as the Philippines and Ireland. Now, as in 1917, the decisive tasks are the fight to develop a conscious, unified movement of the international working class and build a mass revolutionary party capable of leading the struggle for workers' political power. The global nature of the crisis demands an international response, transcending national divisions and opposing militarism. Workers in Iran, the United States, Europe, Asia, and Africa share a common interest in ending the war and the bankrupt capitalist order that gave rise to it. This requires the independent political mobilization of the working class on a socialist program to place the commanding heights of the economy under democratic workers' control, ensuring that production is organized to meet human needs rather than private profit. Under these conditions, the upcoming International May Day Online Rally 2026 assumes critical importance. It will articulate the revolutionary socialist program and perspective workers around the world require to fight imperialist war and its barbaric consequences. Register today to participate and encourage your work colleagues and friends to do the same. Trump Justice Department indicts Southern Poverty Law Center in frame-up to aid fascist groups, by Jacob Cross. In a politically motivated frame-up by the Trump administration aimed at criminalizing the exposure of fascist and white supremacist organizations, the Department of Justice announced Tuesday a criminal indictment targeting the Southern Poverty Law Center, or SPLC. The SPLC has waged legal and political battles to expose criminal actions by fascist groups, beginning with the Ku Klux Klan during the Civil Rights era. The charges, announced by Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche and FBI Director Kash Patel, turn the SPLC's use of informants inside violent far-right groups into a supposed fraud against donors, under conditions in which the Trump administration itself is packed with fascist operatives and is seeking to rehabilitate the very forces the SPLC has exposed for decades. The 14-page indictment, filed in the Middle District of Alabama, charges the SPLC with wire fraud, false statements to banks, and money laundering conspiracy. Its central allegation is that the organization solicited funds to dismantle extremist groups while secretly paying informants inside those groups. The indictment lists informants associated with the Ku Klux Klan, Aryan Nations, National Alliance, National Socialist Movement, American Front, and the online leadership group that planned the 2017 Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville. The cynical character of the prosecution was underscored by the statements of Blanche and Patel themselves. Announcing the indictment, Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche accused the SPLC of, quote, manufacturing the extremism it purports to oppose by paying sources to stoke racial hatred. Patel claimed the organization used donor money to, quote, actually pay the leadership of the supposed violent extremist groups. The indictment alleges more than $3 million in payments between 2014 and 2023 to eight individuals tied to groups, including the Ku Klux Klan and neo-Nazi organizations. But Blanche's own answer to a reporter exposed the falsity of his claim. When asked about the government's legal theory, and specifically whether the indictment alleged that these payments benefited the organizations themselves, Blanche admitted that it did not. He said, quote, to the extent that there's any link between that individual receiving the money and benefits to that organization, that's not in the indictment, unquote. In other words, the administration's headline accusation that the SPLC was effectively funding fascist organizations is not what the indictment says. The government's theory is narrower and more cynical, not that it is illegal to pay informants, but that the SPLC did not spell out to donors and banks exactly how its informant network functioned. This is a fraud case built on innuendo. The administration tells the public that the SPLC was funding neo-Nazi and Klan organizations, while its own acting attorney general admits the indictment does not allege that the money benefited those organizations as such. The real issue for the government is that the SPLC maintained informants inside fascist groups and concealed their identities and payment channels, precisely the sort of method routinely used by the FBI and other state agencies. The fraud charge is grotesque coming from the Trump administration, which has transformed the presidency into a criminal mechanism for personal and family enrichment. Jared Kushner, Trump's son-in-law and Middle East envoy, has continued to solicit and manage billions from Saudi Arabia and other Gulf monarchies through his private investment firm, including the $2 billion investment he secured from the Saudi Public Investment Fund after leaving the White House, while now again functioning as a representative of U.S. policy in the region. The Trump family, meanwhile, has reaped vast sums from cryptocurrency ventures. Reuters estimated that the Trump Organization earned roughly $802 million from crypto ventures in the first half of 2025 alone, including World Liberty Financial and the Trump meme coin. The family's Trump mobile venture announced a Made in America gold-colored phone in 2025, took $100 deposits from customers, and then failed to deliver the device by the promised deadline. Trump has also accepted or celebrated a stream of gifts and tributes, including a Qatari Boeing 747-8 valued at about $400 million for use as a presidential aircraft, a FIFA Peace Prize trophy in metal, and a 24-karat gold mounted Apple plaque from Tim Cook. While the Trump crime family gorges itself on bribes, it seeks to criminalize those who expose the fascist activities of their close political supporters, including the fascist groups that spearheaded the assault on Capitol Hill on January 6, 2021. The indictment dovetails with the broader Stop the Steal mythology promoted by Trump, Alex Jones, and other far-right figures, who claim that the presence of informants at right-wing events proves that these movements were manufactured by the FBI, Antifa, the Democratic Party, the SPLC, or other supposed enemies. This is an inversion of reality. The presence of informants in organizations, such as the Oath Keepers, before January 6, did not prove that the coup was a setup. It demonstrated that the state had warnings about the scale of the violence and that powerful elements within the police, military, and intelligence apparatus refused to act because they were sympathetic to Trump's effort to overturn the election. SPLC interim president and CEO Brian Fair called the allegations false and said the group's informant program had been necessary because of real threats to the organization and its staff. Fair said, quote, in 1983, our offices were firebombed, adding that the SPLC had faced, quote, countless credible threats, unquote, in the decades since. He said the organization used informants to infiltrate violent extremist groups and that, quote, what we learn from informants save lives. The SPLC was founded in 1971 by Morris Dees, Joseph J. Levin Jr., and Julian Bond, at a time when the late stages of the civil rights movement were still marked by Klan terror, church bombings, and murders that had gone unanswered or unpunished by the state. The organization became known for litigation that bankrupted or disrupted fascist and white supremacist groups, including the United Klans of America in the 1980s and the White Aryan Resistance in the early 1990s. That history is what the Trump administration is seeking to reverse. Its message is that exposing fascists is itself criminal, while racist thugs and murderers are to be recast as victims. The political motive is underscored by the personnel and allies of the Trump administration. During Trump's first term, the SPLC reported on figures such as Stephen Miller and Jack Posobiec, both of whom have played central roles in the development of the contemporary fascist movement around Trump. Miller now directs policy from within the White House, while Posobiec functions as a propagandist, an ally of Steve Bannon's far-right network. The attack on the SPLC is therefore also an effort to retroactively discredit its exposures of the individuals and organizations now integrated into or politically aligned with the Trump regime. The most sinister element of the indictment is its implicit claim that fascist groups were not the organic product of American capitalism, racism, militarism, in the decay of bourgeois democracy, but were somehow manufactured by liberal organizations that monitored them. This is the same conspiracy theory used to explain away January 6. It seeks to whitewash the growth of fascism by claiming that those who documented, infiltrated, or exposed fascist organizations were responsible for creating them. Under conditions in which the president openly threatens to wipe out whole countries, neo-Nazis and Christian nationalists direct state policy, and the police and military apparatus is being mobilized against immigrants, protesters, and workers, the prosecution of the SPLC marks a further stage in the destruction of democratic rights. The target is not merely one organization. The indictment is a warning to every journalist, civil rights group, researcher, and political opponent of the Trump administration. Exposing fascism will be treated as a crime, while the fascists themselves are rehabilitated as victims. A Growing Number of Potential Flashpoints in the Global Financial System, by Nick Beams. As the U.S. war in Iran moves well into its second month and the warnings of its long-term effects on the global economy grow louder, the international financial system is increasingly coming to resemble a minefield. There are a growing number of potential flashpoints and vulnerabilities, any one of which, or a combination, could set off a crisis. In a speech delivered on Monday in Japan, Pablo Hernandez de Caz, the general manager of the Bank for International Settlements, or BIS, the umbrella organization of central banks, added another to the list. He warned that stablecoins, quote, raise serious risk for financial integrity and can facilitate regulatory circumvention, unquote, making it easier to evade capital control imposed in emerging markets and developing countries. Stablecoins are a form of cryptocurrency, which supposedly provide greater stability because they are tied to an asset, generally the U.S. dollar. The use of stablecoins has been boosted with their promotion by the Trump administration, which last year saw passage of the so-called Genius Act, giving them an official stamp of approval by setting up regulations for their use. But according to the BIS chief, the growing use of stablecoins, quote, opens up new avenues for tax evasion, unquote. There are estimates, he said, that stablecoins now account for most illicit transactions within the crypto system. On their broader implications for the monetary system, he noted, quote, if widely adopted in their current form, stablecoins would pose policy challenges in several key areas, ranging from credit provision to monetary policy, unquote. In remarks to the Financial Times, Tobias Adrian, the director of the Monetary and Capital Market Department of the International Monetary Fund, said that in some emerging market countries, stablecoins already accounted for, quote, a significant share of payments, including cross-border payments, unquote. The issue of the role of stablecoins in their potential to cause financial disturbances is part of a broader discussion in financial circles about what could trigger the next global financial crisis. In the question and answer session during a Harvard economics class on March 30th, U.S. Fed Chair Jerome Powell was asked precisely this question. His answer focused not on immediate subjects of concern, such as the role of private credit, the possibility that the massive investments in AI are a bubble which will burst, or immediate problems of liquidity in credit markets, but on the long-term stability of the U.S. reflected in the inexorable rise in its debt. He said, quote, it will not end well if we don't do something fairly soon. According to Powell, the present level of debt of $39 trillion having risen from around $9 trillion in 2007 on the eve of the global financial crisis was sustainable, but the rate of increase was not. He did not know what was the absolute level of debt that could be maintained. Quote, I don't think we know what that number is, but the ratio of debt to GDP that would be a problem. But what is clear is that federal government debt is growing substantially faster than the economy, and that is the definition of unsustainable. Others share Powell's views on the rise of U.S. debt, which is threatening the status of the U.S. dollar and treasury bonds as the safe haven for the global financial system. Yale economics professor Andrew Metrick, who specializes in financial stability, told the FT, quote, "Eventually, you will get a crisis where the world says safe assets are no longer considered safe, that is, U.S. dollar-denominated sovereign debt. If that happens, we don't really have the tools to deal with it. That's the biggest risk." The war against Iran has increased interest rates at the longer end of the market, and that is set to continue as the Trump administration plans to increase military spending by 50% to $1.5 trillion by 2027. Metrick said, quote, "We are seeing treasury yields going up again. It is clear that we can't keep borrowing like there is no tomorrow. At some point, the market will say that is enough," unquote. There are growing issues in the short term. The European Systemic Risk Board, which monitors the European Union's financial system, has said if the Iran war continues, it could trigger, quote, "sharp and disorderly asset price corrections." In his Harvard remarks, Powell downplayed immediate risks, including from the private credit market, which has been the subject of concern of late, saying he was, quote, "relatively relaxed about it because the risk, quote, we know about is something we are already trying to do something about." Others, however, are not so sanguine. S&P Global Ratings issued a report earlier this month in which it warned that the exposure of major banks to hedge funds and trading firms with high levels of debt was creating dangers. The bank's exposure to hedge fund and trading firms runs into the trillions of dollars, the S&P report noted. Prime brokerage borrowing, which involves lending by banks to institutional clients, mostly hedge funds to facilitate their leverage and provide the money for their activities in financial markets, went over $2.5 trillion in 2024, doubling in the past 4 years, it said. One of the areas of greatest activity is the so-called basis trade used by hedge funds to exploit the difference between the price of treasury bonds and their associated futures contracts. But because the difference is so small, very large amounts of loans from banks are needed to make a large profit. According to the S&P report, quote, "the surge of this strategy increases second-order risks across the industry. In the event of market volatility or counterparty failure, banks' prime brokerage and securities financing desks could face substantial risks if these leverage positions unwind rapidly," unquote. And the longer the war in Iran continues, the greater the likelihood of increased volatility. A recent letter to G20 finance ministers and central bankers from Bank of England Governor Andrew Bailey in his capacity of the chairman of the Financial Stability Board, a global watchdog, noted that while the war had delivered, quote, "a substantial shock to the global economy," unquote, the financial system so far had absorbed it. But the letter went on to warn of vulnerabilities, including, quote, "stretched asset valuations, the buildup in the non-bank sector of high and increasingly concentrated leverage, and liquidity mismatches, the use of short-term money to finance long-term illiquid assets, opacity and growing complexity in certain markets, notably private credit," unquote. It said there was, quote, "an increased likelihood that multiple vulnerabilities could crystallize at the same time, thereby amplifying the threat to financial stability and the provision of critical financial services," unquote. This has been Paul Fuller for the World Socialist Website.
The World Socialist Website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist Website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.